Good morning. It's 7 o'clock on Monday the 25th of June on RTE Radio 1. This is Morning Ireland with Christopher McKevitt and Rachel English.
Coming up, what caused that big glitch at Ulster Bank? The challenges facing Mohamed Morsi in Egypt? Reading between the lines of what government ministers have been saying on tax and welfare? And the draw for hurling's next round will happen in this studio after 8:30.
The headlines. Ulster Bank branches will have extended opening hours again today as the bank continues to attempt to clear the backlog caused by a major IT problem. Egypt's Islamist president-elect has pledged to be a leader for all citizens regardless of gender or faith. And Gardaí are appealing for witnesses following the death of a 55-year-old man in Dublin city centre at the weekend after a possible assault. With the news in full, here's Brian Jennings.
80 Ulster Bank branches will have extended opening hours today as the bank continues to attempt to clear the backlog in payments caused by its IT failure. The bank says the scale of the backlog is unprecedented and it may not have resolved the problem until the end of the week, Sandra Harley reports.
The central bank is monitoring the situation. All financial institutions are in daily contact, yet still Ulster Bank cannot fix the breakdown, which is now going into its sixth day. Payments from Ulster Bank into other banks are said to be nearly cleared, but a major issue remains with updating the bank's own accounts, processing incoming payments and updating balances. The bank has been facilitating customers who call into branches with payslips and giving them cash. But this week presents a challenge as many monthly salaries will have to be processed. Social welfare payments going into Ulster Bank accounts may also be hit. 80 branches will stay open until 6 p.m. today to help customers.
The winner of Egypt's election, Mohamed Morsi, of the Muslim Brotherhood, has called for unity in the country and pledged to be a leader for all Egyptians, regardless of gender or faith. Dr. Morsi said the revolution that removed Hosni Mubarak from power must continue. Thousands of people celebrated late into the night in Cairo's Tahrir Square, after Dr. Morsi got just over 51% of the vote, beating former Prime Minister Ahmed Shafik. The United States has called the election a milestone for the country's transition to democracy and said it was essential that Egypt remained a pillar of regional peace. The chief Palestinian negotiator, Saeb Erekat, said he believed the Palestinian Authority's good relationship with Egypt would continue.
As far as the Palestinian question is concerned, whoever will preside over Egypt, whoever will be the Prime Minister, whoever will be in Parliament, the Egyptian people have always stood for Palestine, for the Palestinian state, for Palestinian independence, for East Jerusalem as capital of Palestine, and I don't think this will ever change.
Gardaí believe a man who died after collapsing in Dublin city centre early yesterday morning may have been assaulted. Witnesses are being sought to the incident. Lisa McKelvey reports.
The victim, believed to be in his mid-50s, was found collapsed on Camden Street at 4:30 yesterday morning. He was attended to at the scene, but died in hospital a short time later. It's thought he was walking home from a night out. Gardaí believe he may have been knocked to the ground in an assault and are appealing for witnesses to come forward in a bid to piece together exactly what happened. They want to hear from anyone who was in the area between 4:15 and 4:30 yesterday morning, particularly those who were close to the Camden Street pedestrian lights.
45 new jobs are to be created in Wexford as a result of a €20 million investment by Danone Baby Nutrition at its manufacturing plant in the town. The investment is supported by the government through Enterprise Ireland. A new report from the global charity The One Campaign has found that the amount of aid given by Europe to poorer countries has fallen for the first time in over a decade. Until now, the trend has been for Europe to move towards the United Nations target for aid, which is 2/3 of 1% of the income of rich countries. Figures from the Pressure Group One show that Irish aid dropped by 3% between 2010 and 2011. Spain and Greece have made the biggest cuts. Adrian Lovett is the Europe Executive Director of the One Campaign. He says that the amount of aid needed to reach targets is relatively low.
The 100 billion euros that I think was mobilised to underwrite and protect the Spanish banks over a matter of hours a short while ago is 5 times what would be needed to meet Europe's commitments on aid.
The funeral of James Nolan takes place in County Wicklow this morning. The 21-year-old drowned in a canal in Bydgoszcz, Poland, where he had travelled with friends to support the Republic of Ireland in the European Soccer Championships. He will be laid to rest following a funeral mass in the Church of Our Lady in Blessington at 11 a.m. A search has resumed this morning for a man who got into difficulty while swimming at a quarry in County Wexford last night. A second man, who was also at the quarry at Barntown, was airlifted to safety by the Coast Guard helicopter. Local Gardaí are coordinating the operation. Now the time is coming up to 7:06. Mainly dry at first with spells of hazy sunshine. However, cloud will increase with outbreaks of rain or drizzle in the southwest and south later today. Mild and humid with highest temperatures 15 to 20 degrees.
It's almost 7:07 and we have another special guest in studio this morning, by the way. The Liam McCarthy Cup is with us and we'll have the draw for the next qualifying round of the All-Ireland Hurling Championship later on in the programme. Now though, let's get what it says in this morning's papers from Fiona Kelly.
Pay cuts and tax hikes and who should be hit hardest is the theme for the lead story in both the Irish Times and Irish Examiner this morning. The Times reports that the Minister for Health, James Riley, has raised the prospect of cutting overtime and premium pay rates in the HSE, which by the end of April had overspent by €200 million, a figure which may run up to €500 million if spending is not curbed by the end of the year. The Minister for Public Expenditure, Brendan Howlan, has urged Dr. Riley to personally engage with his department and the HSE to tackle overspending. The paper reports that the moves being proposed by Dr. Riley would have serious implications for the Croke Park Agreement between the government and public sector unions, which protects core pay until 2014. The story in the Examiner, meanwhile, focuses on disagreements within the coalition government over whether top earners should bear the brunt of budget cuts. Labour Party Chairman Colm Keaveney is quoted as saying that the government needs to have a tax argument to ensure that the burden falls on those in the higher income bracket, whereas the senior Fine Gael source says that it would be counterproductive to disproportionately target those in the upper tax band. For its lead, the Irish Independent reports that a proposed 10% increase in gas, in tandem with an increase in electricity, will push the average annual household bill above €2,000 this year. There's good news for those who use home heating oil, however, since the falling price of oil on the world markets is expected to be passed on to consumers. Turning now to the tabloids, the Irish Daily Star leads today with the death of a man following what is believed to have been a random street attack on Camden Street in Dublin on Saturday night. For its lead, the Irish Daily Mail reports on the fact that 1,311 retired teachers were given jobs as state exam supervisors this year, almost double the 742 unemployed or substitute teachers who were given supervising jobs. The Irish Sun and Irish Daily Mirror, meanwhile, both run with picture stories of Robbie Keane holding up a jersey which bears the words RIP James Nolan after he scored a goal yesterday playing for LA Galaxy. The Sun reports that the Irish captain made the gesture after a phone call to the family of the 21-year-old supporter who drowned in Poland while he was attending Euro 2012 last week. And indeed, many of this morning's papers report on James Nolan's removal, which brought the village of Blessington to a halt yesterday. The Independent carries a story on its front page today about a collision between a coach with 49 pensioners on board and a car outside Ardrahan in Donegal on Saturday night. Luckily, the coach driver, Frank McKelvey, managed to swerve the coach into a ditch to avoid a head-on collision, and only three people, including the 18-year-old driver of the car, required overnight attention at Letterkenny General Hospital. But finally, the Times this morning names the winner of its Best Place to Live in Ireland competition as Westport. Also shortlisted were Rathmines in Dublin, Ardrahan, County Donegal, Cork City and Killarney, County Kerry. John O'Callaghan, who nominated Westport for the competition, says that although he works in Ennis during the week, the lure of Westport brings him home most weekends. He also tells Cathy Sheridan how thrilled he is for Westport and at the fact that his town didn't lose out to Kerry.
Thank you, Fiona. We'll be having more on Westport later in the programme. But now 7:10, Conor Brophy's here with the business news.
Christopher, a tale of two food companies this morning. Don Meats today opens a processing facility at Carl's Cross in Waterford that will handle 18,000 tonnes of beef per year for McDonald's. Don Meats recently signed a 5-year, €300 million deal to supply beef to the fast food giant, which last year purchased €110 million worth of Irish meat for export. Another multinational, as you heard in the headlines, Danone, is investing €20 million to expand its Wexford plant, producing baby and infant formula under the Aptamil and Cowan Gate brands. After falling by 7% in the past week, crude oil prices edged higher this morning, Tropical storm Debbie has caused about a quarter of US oil and gas production in the Gulf of Mexico to be shut down temporarily as a precaution. That region accounts for a fifth of all US oil production and 6% of the world's natural gas production. Employers group IBEC will brief members this morning on the impact of new rules on how they're expected to fund defined benefit pension schemes. IBEC has its own ideas as to how pension legislation should be reformed, and we'll hear some of them from Director Brendan McGinty at 10 to 8. Ahead of Thursday's EU Council meeting, Germany's Der Spiegel magazine cites an unpublished report from the German finance ministry as suggesting that a euro breakup would knock as much as 10% from German economic output and see unemployment in the country rise from 3 to 5 million. In its cover story this week entitled Euro Breakup, a Scenario, Der Spiegel quotes an unnamed German finance official as saying that saving the euro is the lesser and certainly less costly of two evils. Speaking of that euro this morning, it's fallen marginally against the dollar to 125.3 and 80.4 pence sterling. Market analysts suggesting the weakening of the euro from a one-month high of over 127 against the dollar early last week indicates scepticism among investors that that upcoming summit will deliver any concrete new proposals or policies to ease the debt crisis.
Thank you very much, Connor. 12 minutes past seven. Up next, problems continue at Ulster Bank and the budget skirmishing begins. Morning, Ireland, at 14 minutes past seven. More than 100,000 Ulster Bank customers will have to wait for several days yet for operations at the bank to get back to normal. It's almost a week now since a software update led to the failure of payment processing systems at Ulster Bank and at the British Bank's RBS and NatWest. 80 branches will stay open until 6 o'clock this evening to deal with customer problems. Chris Skinner is a blogger and chairman of the Financial Services Club, which provides information to those working in banks. He's on the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Rachel.
Are you surprised by how long it's taking the bank to get back to normal?
I think everyone is. It's a disaster for the bank in terms of reputation and capability, but normally they would have backup plans, contingency plans, so that this would not happen, and that's been the surprise this time.
What's now known about exactly what went wrong last week?
Well, from what's in the public domain, we believe that the banks was implementing an upgrade to the payment systems last week, and that caused a problem with their systems. It corrupted their files, and they haven't been able to get the files backed up and online again, and that's what they've been trying to do for the last week. And now we're over a week into the issue, and they still don't seem to have the whole thing resolved.
I suppose, though, most of us would have thought that that sort of update, that it would have been fairly routine.
Well, yes and no. The problem that banks have is that they're using systems that are typically 30 or more years old, and they are keen to upgrade those to make them fit for the future. And so they're implementing changes, which is what the bank was doing last weekend, and it caused a problem. To try and find the problem is the big issue, because there's millions of lines of code, and you might find that it's affected one line of code on the software system, only to find it's actually then another one, another one, another one. And until they get all of them resolved, it's a huge problem.
In terms of how it has spoken to its customers, how do you think the bank has handled the situation?
I think they're trying incredibly hard to resolve the situation. They've been opening their branches through the weekend until late, and equally, I'm pretty sure they've got all their systems people working 24/7 to try and sort out the systems problem. They are now saying that they'll waive any overdraft fees, for example, to most customers, I believe, and therefore they're doing their utmost to try and make sure the issue is sorted out.
And yet, isn't there a problem, though, in the sense that every day they keep saying, well, it'll be sorted shortly, it'll be sorted shortly. I think many people thought that the bank would be back to normal by this morning. Now we're being told it's the end of the week.
Well, I think there's the issue, which is that most banks go through systems upgrades. They are all running old systems. They all have to change over time. Lloyds, for example, when they took over HBOS, merged the HBOS systems into their systems. I don't think most customers saw huge issues. There were some, but not big issues like we've seen with NatWest. And that's where the failure is, really. It's a lack of competency to find a bank, you know, not being able to run online for over a week and now maybe 2 weeks.
Ulster's parent bank, RBS, it's been in the wars quite a bit in recent years.
Yes, I mean, we all talk about the 83% taxpayer-owned bank and the fact that it's gone through a major crisis. Having said that, it's still a bank. It still runs and should run effectively in its systems and its capabilities. And this is a huge reputational hit.
Thank you very much for joining us. Chris Skinner there, chairman of the Financial Services Club. Almost 18 minutes past seven.
And to Cairo next, where there were celebratory fireworks in Tahrir Square yesterday after the announcement that the Muslim Brotherhood's Mohamed Morsi has won the vote to become Egypt's first elected civilian president. Israel says it respects the outcome. Iran says Egypt is on the pledge of is in the final stages of becoming an Islamic awakening. Well, on the line is one Irishman who was in Tahrir Square yesterday, freelance journalist David Lynch, and he's on the line from Cairo. Good morning to you.
Morning, Christopher.
Now, what sort of a president is Mohamed Morsi pledging to be?
Well, if you go by his speech to the nation last night, he is going to be a president for the whole country. He name-checked nearly every single group in the country during his speech. He reached out to the young martyrs from the revolution last year, and he says his election would not have happened if they had not made their sacrifice. But he also reached out to the army and also to the police force and to the Christian minority. So if you believe his word, he's going to be president for everybody. However, many people here are suspicious of that. There is a lot of suspicion towards the Muslim Brotherhood, and also he barely got more than 50% of the vote here, so we will have to wait and see.
On the optics, at least, he has stood down from the political wing of the Muslim Brotherhood, and that's in line with the pledge, as you say, to be a president for all. How likely is it that he can convince the 12 million or so who voted for former Hosni Mubarak-appointed Prime Minister Ahmed Shafiq, and also the many millions who didn't vote at all in these elections, that he can actually rebuild the country and rebuild society there?
It is a gargantuan task for him. Not least, even if he has the motivation to do that, he has to be questioned whether he actually has the power to do it. He takes up his role as president when the military has announced that the powers he will have are very constrained. He will not have much powers when it comes to military matters and maybe even foreign affairs and some budgetary matters. So also there is decades of suspicion built up here amongst some against the Muslim Brotherhood. Partly because of their actions, but also partly because of extremely hostile state media towards the Brotherhood under Mubarak. So he has a really difficult task overcoming the fears of many people here.
Now, there are big expectations from abroad also for this new president. America welcoming the result, Israel saying it respects the result, and Iran saying Egypt in the final stages of an Islamic awakening. There are huge pressures from outside the country.
Yes, there is, but I think in the short to medium term, Egypt is in no position to project much power beyond its borders. Morsi's president has huge domestic issues facing him, both the economy and other issues. But the Brotherhood has done much in the last few months to try to get America on side. Many of their representatives have been all over Washington in the last few months, meeting diplomats and think tanks. And they've made a lot of announcements saying that they would respect previous peace deals, which mainly means the Camp David Accord with Israel. So even though their rhetoric might be more hostile to Israel than certainly Mubarak's was, we will have to see whether it will take any actions that will back that up.
In relation to the atmosphere in Cairo this morning, I mean, yesterday we saw the celebrations, we saw the fireworks. What's the atmosphere like in Cairo this morning?
Well, Cairo is quiet this morning, and that is not an adjective you use for the city very often. Last night, it was not quiet, but it was different in different parts of the city. Tahrir was bouncing. It was mainly an Islamist crowd there, but they were dancing in the streets. And obviously, this is a huge success for the Muslim Brotherhood after decades of being underground and being in opposition to win the presidency is a huge thing for its support base. But I travelled around the city, and and the reaction in different areas was different. In middle class, kind of also rich areas like Zamalek, there wasn't so much celebration in the streets. But in more working class areas like Mbaba, on the west bank of the Nile, there was fireworks and people out on the streets. So even though that's not very scientific, I think it points to the divided country that Morsi takes up the reins of power in.
And a final question for you. If we look back on this election in 3 years' time, how will it be measured as a success, if indeed it is a success?
That is a very tough question because things move so quickly here in Egypt. To actually say how you can look back in 3 months' time might be difficult. I think for a lot of people here, especially who were involved in the revolution, it would be seen as a success if in 3 years' time the civilian president, whether it's Morsi or whether it's somebody who comes after him, has actual power. But at the moment, a lot of people believe that he will be only a figurehead because the military have made what many people see as a power grab over here in the last week and a half by announcing that the new president's power will be constrained. But so for a lot of people, success will mean that the president has actual power. And also for other people, the chant and phrase of the revolution was bread, freedom and social justice. And they're very abstract things, but for